Hey, happy Thursday, and welcome to Addicted to Faith, the Last Storyteller podcast. I'm Jim, your host and storyteller. Tonight, we're moving right into part two of The Last Wish, a story that we started last week, short story. And if you missed it last week, well, I'll put a link in the show notes and you can go back and listen to that one. Listen to that one first and come back to this one, however you want to do it. But sit back, get yourself a nice cup of hot coffee, hot chocolate, maybe some Tennessee whiskey as we move into The Last Wish, part two. Cam climbs the stairs to the second floor. The carpet had been removed from the hallway after Carrie died. The bloodstains would have never come out. He opens the first door on his right. It had been Carrie's hobby room. The late morning sun shines through the sheer white curtains. The long table where she worked is covered in dust. Her sewing machine sits as it did on the day she died, inches of the lavender material still tucked beneath the pressure plate, the needle in the up position as if waiting for her to return. He crosses the room, stopping in front of the curio cabinet. Carrie kept her favorite glass figurines in this room as inspiration, she told him. He picks up a crystal angel with a golden harp held in miniature hands.
"What are you doing home?" she asked.
"I got fired."
"Not yet,"
he can hear her grinning. "But I will be. That asshole Snodgrass, he has it out for me."
"Screw him. Show him you can do it. I have faith in you."
"I can't." I threw away the file and the laptop.
"And you peed on them."
Her bubbly laughter comes from a misplaced memory.
"You have your laptop here.
No excuses, bucko." "Nah, it's too much to redo now. It's over." Silence. "She's gone," he thinks, turning the small angel between his fingers.
"Then you know what you must do."
"Oh, I thought you left me." He moves the glass angel from one hand to the other. "But I don't know what to do. Tell me. Please, tell me what to do."
"Kill him."
He drops the angel. The crystalline cherub bounces off the edge of the cabinet before slamming against the hard floor and shattering into a thousand little pieces. Sitting at the table, Cam holds a bottle of whiskey in one hand, the melted milkshake in the other. The double-double burger, minus one bite, sits between the two. He's trying to remember the last time he had drank whiskey. It had been years. He never even liked the taste of whiskey.
"I know when it was," Carrie's voice whispers in his ear.
He tilts the bottle, watching the golden brown liquid fall into the chocolate shake. He pours until the chocolate honey whiskey flows over the sides of the in-and-out paper cup. Setting the bottle down, he wipes at the spill with his index finger.
"Not bad," he says, licking his lips. "You don't want to talk about it?"
Carrie prompts. "There's nothing to talk about." He tips the bottle again until the milkshake flows over the table, across the double-double, and onto the floor.
"Shit! I know why you drank that night. And, darling, I have forgiven you."
The milkshake goes soaring off the table. With the same hand that sent the shake flying, Cam slams his fist down on the table.
"I didn't fucking kill you. Why do you keep saying that?"
"I didn't say that." He waits for her to continue. When no more phantom words come, he stands and walks to the sink, wetting a cloth before returning to the table to wipe up the mess. He shoves the uneaten burger and soggy fries into the white paper bag. Carefully picking up the shake, he wipes under it. Cam Davenport stands in his kitchen, alone, holding a wet, dirty rag in one hand and a spiked chocolate shake in the other. In three long gulps, he drains half the contents of the cup. "I didn't kill her," he whispers before returning to the sink and emptying the remainder of the chocolate shake down the drain. He turns the faucet on full before making another trip back to the table. He picks up the bottle of whiskey, looks around for the screw on top. It's nowhere to be found. It was there, and now it's gone. Just like his job. Just like Carrie. He walks back to the sink, tips the bottle, and stares as the golden brown liquid falls into the darkness of the drain.
Don't forget the other bottle. She's back.
His stomach rumbles. Turning back to the table, he eyes the paper bag. I can't eat that. Cam walks over to the refrigerator. He freezes with his hand on the handle. Photos, framed in red and white plastic squares, held in place with magnets, cover both doors. Another passion of Carrie's. Real pictures you can hold in your hand, share with others, tuck them inside the perfect holiday card, or stick them to the refrigerator door. Try that with your smartphone. He stares at a picture of Carrie standing with her best friend, Mary Jane St. Bridges. Their arms are around each other, smiling like only they know why. In the background, hundreds of white canopies. Is that the Apple Valley Artisan Market? Cam asks out loud. He pulls the picture out the fridge, looking at it closer. It is. I'll be damned. Carrie never told me she went there. He turns the photo over. Carrie always noted the date, along with silly notes on the back of her photos. But there is no back of the photo. It's just a red plastic frame. Shit. After a minute of fumbling with the plastic frame, he's finally able to remove the photo. Turning it over, nothing is written on the back. Flipping it back over, he inspects the picture carefully. The background is blurry, but he is certain it is the Apple Valley Market. On the edge of the picture, there's a small hint of blue. He looks closer, bringing the photo to within inches of his face. That's his booth. That's the glassblower's booth. Carrie's right there at the glassblower's booth. He carries the photo over to the table. Sitting down, he turns it over again and then back to the front. Carrie has a bag in her hand, a brown paper bag. Pushing away from the table, he jumps up.
Where are you going, darling?
Shut up, Carrie. A minute later, he returns with a magnifying glass. Holding it above the photo, he focuses on the brown bag.
Blow me glass. Well, I'll be damned. You will be, if you don't finish the proposal.
Carrie, why are you here? Get out of my head. Go find some heavenly stream to tickle your toes in and watch angels frolicking on fluffy clouds. He drops the pitcher. Besides, you know I can't finish. That asshole Snodgrass has been looking for a way to get rid of me. Well, he found it.
I told you. Kill him.
Cam reaches for the unopened bottle of whiskey.
You know how. Just don't be as sloppy as you were with me. Oh, there was blood everywhere. Did you get the stains out, bucko? You know how much I loved that carpet. I didn't kill you, Carrie. He twists the cap off the whiskey bottle. You need a glass. Don't drink out of the bottle. Oh, I love glass. Colorful glass. Crystal glass. Hand-blown glass. Do you remember that Mexican? Oh, his work was so maravilloso. Oh, marvelous, marvelous work. I loved all of that. I love all glass, my darling. Especially sharp glass.
Cam picks up the burger bag and walks to the counter. He drops the bag into the garbage and opens the cabinet door, reaching for a tumbler. Out of the corner of his eye,
He can see the wish jar lying in the bottom of the trash can, now partially concealed by the white bag. Back at the table, he turns the wish jar in his hand.
What are you going to do now? You're being a little sulky. You're being a little pansy. I told you what you have to do. Do it, Cam. Do you? Can you? Will you, Cam? I would tell you to do it for me. But you fucked that up, bucko. There is no me.
I didn't kill you. Damn it, you killed yourself. You cut your wrist with a piece of broken glass. I wasn't even home.
Well, if you had been, maybe I'd still be alive. You could wish for that. Oh, yes, darling. Wish for that. Wish for your lovely wife to be back alive. Just put your lips up to the jar and whisper.
Ignoring the voice, her voice, he opens the Tennessee whiskey. It burns all the way down. So, with no true logic, he takes another long swallow. He'd been out of town because of Snodgrass. It was his job, and she knew it when she married him. Traveling was a hazard on the road to success. But Snodgrass didn't play fair. Cam Davenport traveled more than anyone else in the office, and he was the least paid employee.
Gotta pay your dues, bucko. One day you'll be sitting in Snodgrass' chair.
Carrie had been understanding, even supportive at first, encouraging him to keep his eye on the target. She changed after the miscarriage. She wanted him home all the time. She was clingy and weepy day and night. He wanted to tell her that they could try again, but the time never seemed appropriate to speak of having another baby. Strictly speaking, they never had the first. But Cam didn't say that out loud either. On that day, his flight home had been delayed by 2 hours because of weather conditions. He missed the connector and got home a minute before midnight. All the lights were on. Travis Tritt was spinning in the CD player, the volume turned up too high. He shut the player off and walked into the kitchen, expecting to see his wife. She wasn't there. So he climbed the stairs, kicking off his shoes and loosening his tie as he made the climb. Carrie was lying on the floor. Shards of mirrored glass surrounded her like the odious Lilliputian surrounding the fallen Gulliver. He knew she was dead. Her wrist cut. Her head, her dead eyes staring at him, accusing him. Putting the whiskey bottle down, he lifts the wish jar to his mouth and whispers, I wish Snodgrass was dead.
Well, that's part two. Come back next Thursday night for part three. In the meantime, if you see me walking down the highway, I'm the one carrying a book. Give me a wave and say hello.